to the Daggers and Lids podcast, the podcast that brings you all of the news in the world of women's cricket. We are back for another episode. Daggers, it's good to see you as always. You're looking fresh.
I don't feel fresh. My hair's doing all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff. If I can be brutally honest with you and our dear listeners, welcome to you all again for chapter three. I haven't had a wash today, nor have I had a shave. So I'm sat here in my cave feeling, well, I don't think I'm stanky. I don't think I'm, you know, a bit horrid, but I could have done more. That's all I'm saying. I could have done more.
You're going for the rugged look because you're on your own this week, aren't you?
Yeah, in fact, you know what? Let's go with it. And I will smarten up for next week.
Well, it's good to see you as
always.
Good
to see you.
So today there's not a huge amount of cricket going on in terms of international women's cricket. There is obviously the Charlotte Edwards Cup, which we will bring you a roundup of, and other news, which I know you've managed to put a nice little piece together, which is great. And then later today, which is really exciting, actually, we've got the head of cricket intelligence for the England women from the ECB, who is coming to chat to us, Liam Sanders, or Sanders, I'm not too sure. I suppose there's a bit of differentiation.
I think
where you're from, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably south of sort of Oxfordshire and down, it's Sanders.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, anywhere north of that is Sanders.
Sanders, yeah. Lovely. Well, we're looking forward to having Liam on. There's obviously been quite a lot of chat about artificial intelligence and how that's being used in the game. So we're going to sort of pick his brains and get him to really simplify it for us who need it.
The worry is that you've used... we're getting a guest on who is, down with cricket intelligence. I'm not quite sure if this is necessarily the pod to actually discuss cricketing intelligence. Now, I can only speak for myself. You far more intelligent than I, but it feels like we're getting someone on from like the Secret Service or MI5 or MI6 or something like that, just to give us the sort of, you know, the blueprints to what England actually go through. But I can't wait to hear what he's got to say. Really can't.
Yeah, no, it will be really, really interesting. So yeah, we'll do that. And then obviously we're finished with our new feature, which is the Club Spotlight, which has had a really good response. So we'll obviously talk a bit more about that at the end of the episode. But before we do, Daggers, how are you? You've been busy. You've been in the garden. I know you're on your own this week as well. You did ask me how your hair was earlier. So you haven't had anyone to give you the thumbs up or thumbs down.
I am a bachelor this week. My partner Asha, she's gone back to Poland, her native homeland, and I have a week's worth of peace and quiet. I mean, it's desperately sad for me. I really am very, very gutted indeed. So I've been out into the... I'm glad she doesn't listen to this. I've been out into the garden. I like my garden. I'm quite green-fingered.
Nice.
And learning a lot. Killed some plants. I've murdered them. Really, I didn't mean to, and I might end up in gardening jail. But I've been successful on, I reckon, about sort of 75 to 80% of my plants that I've planted, and some of them are looking beautiful. I have some lovely peonies that have poked through. They're all so happy flowers, Lynn. I'm like, so much rubbish and crap going on in the world. And I think, I look at the flowers and think, they're lovely, those. They brighten my day. Yes, planted quite a few. You've been on your travels, haven't you? Partying it up.
I have, yes. I had a wedding at the weekend, or last week, back end of last week, down in Devon. Yeah, there was a bit of that going on. Got a bit of nightclubber's knee. But yeah, it was my old teammate, Kent and England teammate, Lauren Griffiths, who some people might remember. She was part of the 2009 World Cup winning side back, well, a long time ago now. So it's her wedding day down in Devon, which is amazing, by the way. Everyone will know who's been down there. Such a nice spot. A very long way, but absolutely worth it. But now back to the grind, which is great. So back chatting to you.
It is a long way, depending on where you start from. If you start from Exeter, not that far. but yes, if you start from where you started from in North Leicestershire, then yes, it's a hell of a long way. So well done you, and congratulations to all involved.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's get on with it. We've got, as I say, lots to go get through. Let's start with the news, shall we? I know you've got a nice little bulletin to put together for us and share all the latest news.
Yes, I do. I also have a jingle.
Nice.
And I've worked out that I can't do it whilst we're videoing it. So those who are listening on this audio podcast may well hear a jingle. Those who are watching this on YouTube will probably not, unless I learn how to do it in the next sort of hour, an hour and a half, something like that. Anyway, as it happens, if you are listening, and if I've done it right, how about this news jingle? Daggers and lids. Sort of, but not really. Breaking news. Okay, let me go through the news. And as you mentioned, there's not a great deal going on because of a fairly fallow international period. That will change in due course. Obviously, England are going to be taking on New Zealand very, very soon indeed, which we're looking forward to covering. But India, this week, India are taking on South Africa in a 3-format series. They're going to have 3 one-day internationals in Bangalore. Then they move to Chennai, where they're going to have a test match and also 3 T20 internationals, all of those T20s building up to the T20 World Cup in Bangladesh in October. Should be a really keenly contested series. That, looking forward to seeing how it goes. We'll try and get someone on to talk about it, who's out there, and get the latest from Bangalore and Chennai. The Sri Lankan side are taking on the West Indies. So it's basically Chamari Asfatu versus Hayley Matthews. That and 3 one-day internationals in goal, and then the 3 T20s in Hambantota. I might have got that mixed up, but that's basically what's going on. Sri Lanka versus the West Indies starting off this week. Elsewhere, and this is what I would like to get your gauge and your theories on, Surrey have announced more signings. 3 new players to join the team for the 2025 season. Alice Davidson-Richards, Paige Schofield and Alexa Stonehouse all penned deals to play at the Kia Oval for 2025. This was from their website. I think they're 3 very, very good signings. But apart from that, Lydia, your thoughts on them announcing, they've already signed Bryony Smith, they've announced 4 professional players for the 2025 season already. I've scanned the internet, I haven't seen any other signings announced by any other county. So it shows that I think they're forward thinking, they're getting deals together and sorted and done and dusted. And they're a side that sounds pretty organised to me. I mean, with this tier one status for 8 sides next year, they seem to be ahead of the game. Is that fair?
Yeah, they do. They certainly seem to be the most proactive at the moment. They're obviously in the strongest position as well. I think they've already announced their director of women's cricket, who's Emma Calvert, who is already in post. So I think that will help. I'm sure they have an idea of who their head coach will be. So I think with those 2 people in play, that then allows them to really solidify their playing group as well. So the players that they've signed, I think, is good. It's a nice mix of, it's really a core of your starting 11. You have 2 all-rounders, one who bowls spin, one who bowls pace, a young, exciting seam bowler, and then obviously Paige Schofield as well, who is having a really good season with the bat for the South East Stars. So, yeah, you feel it's a mixture of them being proactive, but also already having the structure and the resources to be in a position to go out and recruit players. I wonder if other teams have already agreed contracts with players. They maybe just haven't been as forthcoming with the information because maybe they don't yet have the structure in place that the likes of Surrey have. I don't know if you'd agree with that as a sort of reasoning for why Surrey are in such a strong position.
Maybe so, and like I say, they always seem to be relatively ahead of the game as well, at that sort of hotbed of women's cricket that they've had for quite a few years. But I think it's something for these counties to be wary of, the 7 others. You know, the best talent's going to get snapped up quickly, and maybe some of those have already signed and not yet been announced. But if you are, I mean, sorry now, you know, they're going to be attracting some pretty big names, I imagine, and they'll have a decent budget to match, one would have thought. So you don't want to be, you know, setting off too slowly, out of the blocks too slowly, if you're signing players for next year. I think the quicker you can get it done and announced, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. And in a way, you feel a little bit for counties like Durham, who are, you know, they obviously haven't been an existing regional team, so they're literally having to put all the building blocks in play. But yeah, good stuff. Nice bit of news.
Yeah, absolutely. One more piece that was actually, we should have covered in the last one, but we didn't have time. We were speaking to Matt Mason, the England bowling coach. From the Central Sparks, they're parting company with head coach Lloyd Tennant and assistant coach Dominic Osler. They've both been on the Sparks coaching staff since October of 2020. They've stepped down by mutual consent. There was a statement on the website, on the Central Sparks website, saying that the director of West Midlands Regional Women's Cricket, Laura McLeod, saying, "We wish both Dom and Lloyd all the best for the future. Decisions like this are never easy. The guys are passionate about women's cricket in the Sparks. They've helped shape the early stages of the professionalisation of the women's game. They achieved success with the team, finishing runners-up in the Charlotte Edwards Cup in 2022, and under Lloyd's stewardship, developed Sparks' enviable pacer bowling attack. We're grateful for their service. We believe the time is right to make changes to the Sparks coaching staff and structure for the remainder of the season and in readiness for next season." Bit of a strange one to me, this one, Lid. In that, I'm going to make no bones about it. I know both of these guys very well. I've known them for the best part of 25 years. Lloyd was actually a coach of mine at Leicestershire. This is how far back we're talking. I was playing, and Lloyd was bowling coach for Leicestershire. And I played alongside Dominic Osler as well. It just seems a strange time to change your coaching staff, and also a fairly contradictory type of bit in the statement, saying how well they've done and what they've done for the Sparks, yet they're changing the coaches. It just seems a little fishy to me.
Yeah, the timing one is, I agree with that. I think the timing's interesting. I think the only, when I think about the reason for why it could have happened, I think it could be largely dictated because of the timelines that we've had with the tier ones being announced. Obviously, there's been that process, and they've only really just been recently announced sort of in the last, one or two months, isn't it? The time goes very quickly. So maybe in that time of them being announced, there's obviously then been conversations around, okay, well, what will we look like as a tier one county? I know their replacements, Darren Franklin, who has been involved at Warwickshire for quite a number of years now. He did the women's team when I was playing, actually, for Kent, and he was one of the coaches. He also did the under-19 England team. And then former New Zealand player Justine Dunt. So I just wonder whether they've had that conversation or knowing they're a tier one county and that's the direction that they want to go in. But yeah, as you say, it's always a tricky time to palm off your coaches midway through the season. So,
it's going to be interesting in that they're still involved in the 100. They're still involved in the women's game. Dominic Osler will be part of the Birmingham Phoenix setup. Lloyd Tennant will be part of the Manchester Originals setup. So, it just seems a little odd. And maybe we'll get to the bottom of that at some point, Liz.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. As you say, there isn't a huge amount going on, but I think you've covered everything that is, which is good. Let's move on to the Charlotte Edwards Cup now. So we've actually had quite a lot of games that have gone on. So this time we're going to split it in two daggers so that we can do our round. We can each have a bit of a roundup of the Charlotte Edwards Cup. But the headline from the last couple of rounds is that the Blaze have qualified. They're the first team to qualify through to finals day, if you like. So congratulations to them. Absolutely. They've been playing some excellent cricket. And then in the games that we've had, so going back to last Thursday, which was the 6th of June at Lords, that was a win for the South East Stars, who chased down 116 to beat the Sunrisers. Paige Schofield, as we've already mentioned, being in good form, she got her third 50 of the competition for the Stars. Then on Friday at Leicester, we had the Blaze with a convincing win against the Western Storm. There are a couple of low scoring games, actually. The Western Storm only posted 99 and the Blaze chased that down in the 15th over. Heather Graham, who's the Aussie all-rounder, she came in and took 4 for 10 in her Blaze debut. And then in Manchester, the Thunder were bowled out for 85 and the Vipers chased that down inside the 11th over. Charlie Knott and Lindsay Smith, the two Vipers spinners, took 3 wickets each. And that was actually the biggest victory that any side has had in the Charlotte Edwards Cup. So good stuff from the Vipers. And then lastly, on Saturday, the 8th of June at Birmingham, the Northern Diamonds defended 137 against the Central Sparks, who posted 124 in their allocation. So that was the first half of the Charlotte Edwards Cup, Daggers, and you're going to see us home with the rest of the action.
I am indeed. There was 4 matches all played yesterday. We start at the Seat Unique Stadium in Bristol. The Vipers overcame the Western Storm by 18 runs. The Vipers defending 137 for 9. Georgia Adams with a half century for the Vipers. Half century 2 for Heather Knight. England captain making 69 in response. Not enough for the Western Storm, although Lauren Filer, good news for her, 4 overs, 3 for 8. Georgia Adams and Charlie Dean both picking up 3 wickets for the Vipers. That spin attack, Lindsay Smith got a couple of wickets as well. That spin attack has, just be wary of the Vipers, I think, as we come towards the semi-finals. The South East Stars were defeated by the Central Sparks by 3 wickets. Low-scoring affair, 122 for 8. The South East Stars, that was knocked off in the final over by the Sparks. Sophia Dunkley in the runs for the Stars with 58. Emily Arlott taking 4 for 21 for the Central Sparks. Tilly Courtine-Coleman with 3 for in response for the South East Stars. But the Sparks winning that one. The Blaze beat the Diamonds by 13 runs. That's at Headingley. The Blaze 159 for 7. The Diamonds just falling short. Runs for Catherine Bryce for the Blaze. Tammy Beaumont with 45. Bryce picked up 54 from 39. Bess Heath's 59 in response was in vain for the Diamonds. 3 wickets for Sarah Glenn. Glenn. 3 wickets for Sarah Glenn for the Blaze in that one. And finally, the Sunrisers were defeated by the Thunder at Blackpool. A lovely Sunday by the seaside. Alice McLeod made 60 for the Sunrisers. Sophie Eccleston took 3 foot for the Thunder. But Sarin Smales, 39, not out from 33, saw the Thunder home. So the table as it stands at the moment, as you mentioned, the Blaze have already qualified. They're 7 from 7. The South East Stars look fairly comfortable. They're 5 wins from 7 in second position with 25 points. 2 teams on 17 points, the Southern Vipers and the Central Sparks. And the Thunder just below them with 13 points in 5th position. Remember, top 4 go through. The Sunrisers, Western Storm and Northern Diamonds. I'm not quite sure if mathematically they are out, but it will be a long way for them for qualification.
Yeah, it will be. And we're sort of coming to the back end now of the group game. So a couple of rounds left. They start this Thursday through to Sunday for the next round. And then the final round is on the 19th of June, which is a Wednesday. And then, of course, it will be the semi-finals and the final, which is all on one day at Derby. And that's on the Saturday, the 22nd of June. So that really should be a great day, even if your team isn't there. Actually, just get down and watch some really good cricket, because there will absolutely be some of the best players on show in that day. So it should be. You're going to be there, Daggers, aren't you?
I am. It's going to be a full-on finals day, much like the men have it in the Vitality Blast, where previously last year, I think it was just an eliminator game and a final. Well, this time it's going to be 2 semi-finals, proper semi-finals, and a final after that. So it'll be a brilliant day of cricket at Derby. Get yourselves down there.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, brilliant. Okay, well, let's move on because, as I mentioned, we've got the a new guest this week. First time that he's going to ever be on our pod, Liam Sanders, or Sanders, who is the head of cricket intelligence for the England women's cricket team at the ECB. And we're really excited to have him on the pod. We're going to be able to pick his brains and ask him all things cricket intelligence, artificial intelligence, all those sorts of things. So really looking forward to having a chat with him just now. Well, welcome, Liam, to the Daggers and Lids podcast. And just want to say a huge thank you for giving up your time. I know it's a really busy period for you, particularly at this stage of the season. So welcome to the pod.
Thank you for having me.
I guess the first thing for our listeners is just for you to give a bit of an insight into your role, obviously head of cricket intelligence at the ECB for the England women's team, a new post that you've taken up last September, I think. So yeah, just tell us what that includes, because it sounds pretty funky.
Yeah, it does. And look, first off, thanks for having me on. Really exciting. And I love what you guys do. I think it's fantastic. So, but yeah, I'll crack on. So it's a lofty title, I know. A few people wince at it a little bit, which is fine. I'm fine with that. But essentially, why do we exist? So it's not just me. I line manage a small but impactful team of analysts and data scientists, or whatever we want to call them, that support the long-term aspirations of England women's cricket, essentially. And we exist to make better cricket decisions faster. So we're not the data team for England women's cricket, because everyone owns data, everyone works with data. We're not the gatekeepers for that, and we have certain operational teams or smaller subgroups within England's women's cricket that do fantastic things with data, and one being our science and medicine team. So we're solely focused on cricket. So the tactical element of the game, the technical element with the game, the on-field decision making. Specifically within that, whether it's any form of project implementation, product development, people deployment, we pride ourselves on sitting across key three pillars or themes. And quite simply, those are our ability to provide well-rounded and accurate cricket intelligence, so provision. If we've provided it, we need to interpret it in the right way. So we need to be curious enough to generate opportunities to form a competitive advantage and move the game forward in what is becoming more of a competitive field now. It's not just one or two teams. And the final bit, which is may sound silly, it's harder than you think, is the explanation piece. So once you've provided the information and you've interpreted it and you've found opportunities, we need to explain it in a manner that we can seize on those opportunities by having the right conversations at the right time with clear and confident communication. And with that, we tend to lean and inspire or get inspiration from outside of cricket. So journalism, print, media, there are certain individuals certainly that I look towards that have this wonderful ability of articulating and explaining really complex topics that people can understand. You think like in the world of astronomy and physics, for example, like a Brian Cox that has this amazing ability to articulate what is really complex into something that's exciting and digestible. People like Ross Atkins in the world of politics and media and whatever it may be. And I think from a timely point, people like Michael Mosley, which obviously was a really sad news of his passing in the past 48 hours, but had this amazing ability to explain complex information in the world of health and medicine that positively impacted many, many lives. So we're not just data providers to try and win games of cricket. There's a lot more to it. Yes, there's the interpretation, but we need to explain it in the right way too. So that's in a nutshell where we sit within the organisation.
And what about how you then link up with the coaches? Because obviously your role, I guess, is to sift through all that information. And it's interesting that you've mentioned like the tactical side of things and obviously technical. So I guess the first question I'm thinking is, what does that actually look like? Is it a big spreadsheet that you have? Is it, I don't know, loads of paperwork that you work through? What does that actually look like from a practical point of view, and how do you share that with the coaches?
So look, from a practical sense, it's not easy, because we play so much cricket, and there is I've previously worked in the world of Olympic sport, and we would call them milestone targets. Let's call them global events. There's one every year. So my role in particular within that is to guide attention, really. We're working and living in an attention economy where we used, historically, information was really, really, really valuable. I think now attention is more valuable than information, because we're so distracted with the modern world. So my role is to understand the key performance requirements of how we're going to win global competitions, not just in the next couple of weeks against New Zealand, but how we're going to be successful in Bangladesh, how we're going to be successful in Australia at the Ashes, a 50-over World Cup in Australia, in India in a year's time, 2026 World Cup at home, and Olympic Games in LA in 2028. All of those things, and that's where I tend to position myself with a certain distance physically from the team, in that it gives me the headspace and the breathing space to think deeply and laterally about the future. And I will then dip in, and I've always got clear lines of communication with the coaches around performance today and tomorrow, but I'll always dip in with around future-led projects around some of our strategic imperatives for the future. So we have a lot of data. It doesn't sit on a single spreadsheet. It sits on what we call a data lake in the cloud. So you can't see it, you can't touch it, but it's there. But one of my strategic imperatives, as it were, coming into the role, is making that more accessible and understandable. Most sporting organisations have a setup where we have data scientists, which essentially are gatekeepers for data, and then you disseminate that information out to people. I think we're in a world now where technology has afforded us for that to be far more accessible. So, and I want to create products and systems that can do that for our coaches, instead of having to come through me or colleagues of mine.
Liam, I've got a giggle. I can't help it, because obviously this is what you do. This is what you have done for a little while. This is your job title, and you know, Lydia being a qualified coach as well, understandably, you know, or will understand all of these aspects of what you explain. I'm still lost in that there's a lot of sort of technical jargon that you use that is right. It's within your remit of. But I'm a layperson here, and look, I played the game for a bit. But if I'm listening to this, I still don't know. As a fan, I don't know what you do. How do you do it? What do you gather? What do you give? What do you measure? You know, how do you decide of what to sort of put forward in front of the coaches? So if you can sort of simplify it.
Of course.
I told you we'd be struggling with cricket intelligence, Lydia. I'm part of.
And
I'm just here at the back of the room going, Miss, I don't get it. I don't get it. Just, if you would, just sort of put it into more plain spoken and understandable terms for us who don't know what kind of things you go through.
So in a lay summary, we spend a lot of time understanding performance to work out what really matters. So from a bowling perspective, we want to, in the context of the women's game, not the men's game, the women's game, we spend a lot of time studying performance data, which you would acquire from standard scorecards. We've invested, or the organization have invested, a lot of money into ball trajectory technology, so we can understand speeds and how much the ball swings and deviates and lines and lengths, all of those things. It's our job to sift through that massive masses and masses of data to really understand what are the performance metrics that predict performance, and where we can use that performance data longitudinally map how a player is developing over time. And we will do that by understanding what performance metrics are most important to playing in Australia, on the pitches in Australia, what's most important to playing on pitches in Bangladesh at the venue that we're going to be playing at the T20 World Cup. And we'll then try and articulate all of that information in a digestible and an understandable way to the coaches to drive decision-making. So it supports who they select and when over time. Is that a little bit better?
It is. It is. And so these little machines and GoPro cameras that we've seen on umpires, both in the men's and women's game this year, and that I went down to Lords and had a little play on one of them. I think there was something broken on it because it was logging me at about 62, 63 miles an hour.
So must have been the old software daggers. Yeah,
it must have been faulty because I'm sure I was quicker than that. But these are the sort of things that you're using to get all of that information together. It is, of course, you know, statistics and data, and that is what you've been asked to put together, a sort of dossier on X. So say it's an Ashes series, a T20 Ashes series in Australia. Mm. Can you then sort of highlight with all of this data that you've picked up the sort of players who play in a certain way or have a certain bat speed or bowling speed or trajectory? Is that what you put together and sort of suggest going forward to the coaches?
Absolutely. And we talk more in the language of roles. What roles do we want players to play, whether it's in certain phases of the game? There's no avoiding that the majority of cricket we play is white ball in 50 over or T20. And we're playing more tests, but our big milestone targets and global events outside of the Ashes are white ball tournaments. So we talk a lot about white ball roles with the bat and with the ball in different phases. So we're able to use that information to understand which are the players that thrive in certain positions, roles, phases of the game. And we can then take that to our coaches to support the decision-making that we have in selection. And I come back to the attention point is that we have a wonderful set of players. We have a wonderful set of coaches and support staff. But the majority of the time, it's focused on winning the next game of cricket, which is absolutely the right thing to do. It's my job to always keep an eye on what the future looks like, because if we don't do that, given the amount of cricket that we play, big series and competitions creep up on you quickly, and you've essentially lost a competitive advantage. So I'm spending a lot of time at the minute looking ahead towards the Ashes. I'm spending a lot of time looking towards the 2026 World Cup in the UK, because that's going to be incredibly impactful for not just for us as a team, but for women's cricket in general. So that's where I position my headspace, I suppose.
One question I've got, Liam, is just around the difference between, obviously, your head of cricket intelligence, but artificial intelligence has also been floated around recently in the media, actually. And it was, I don't think there was a huge amount of attention paid to it. And actually, it was one of the reasons why we wanted to get you on, was John Lewis alluded to the fact that last summer when the Ashes were going on, you worked with an external company, I think, called Prospect, who came in.
That's right.
And helped you essentially, I think, pick the squads through use of artificial intelligence. And again, similar to daggers, for complete laymans like us, what did that whole process entail? And I guess, what point did it lead you to in terms of the selections? How did it get you there?
So as a start, I wasn't involved in the Ashes. So let me make that clear. And I'm not going to take any credit for the fantastic performances of England women's cricket at that point in time.
You could have done that. We wouldn't have been any of the wiser.
That's not in my character, Daggers. So I'll quite happily palm that off to someone else.
I'd have done that, yeah. But
look, as a starter, we use artificial intelligence as an additional source of information, objective information to guide decision making. Now artificial intelligence or machine learning or whatever or a computer, they do not pick the team. People pick the team, and we use that with balancing subjective information. And what's really interesting in and around that, in that modern society has downgraded subjective information and experience in favor of objective information, because far more technology, you can measure so many things. So I suppose my role within that is basically find the balance, because we don't want a computer picking the team and it wouldn't be most efficient. But in terms of the AI and the selection tool itself, yes, we've partnered with an external company called Prospect, who are excellent. And in a bit of a lay summary, they've developed an artificial intelligence player rating model. So it's entirely based on predictions. So it's a model that predicts performance. So for example, we'll bring it to life. If you've got a Nat Sivabrunt facing an Ash Gardner as a bowler in the 14th over of a first innings in an international T20 in Bangladesh. So there's some real nuances with that. Yeah. What we're able to do is have a look at the AI model will tell us what the likely outcome of that delivery is based on historical data. So those predictions are made by training what is known as a machine learning model. And all of that is based on balls that the player has faced historically ever within the women's game across all forms, whether it's domestic cricket, international cricket, in the UK, overseas franchise, it's all games. And all of those weights are objective, essentially. So it's the sense that AI will find the best combination of information that predicts the outcome of a given situation. And the situations that we are in cricket are really nuanced. So the environment, the pitch, the opposition, the phase of the game. So all of the AI model takes all of those things into account. Now, what that does, it allows us to have a really flexible player ratings, as it were, which we can adjust. We can adjust important factors based on the context of the game. We don't think, we don't put a single number by a player. It's just that an individual player will be stronger in certain circumstances than others based on the history of the game and the context. In addition to that, our partners have built an AI simulator, and I think this is what Louis talks about. It can essentially take two sets of playing 11s, and this uses our predictive ratings to basically play matches together against one another virtually. But they don't just play each other once; they play each other hundreds of thousands of times using a lot of computing power. And from that, we can have a look at to see how different 11s match up against one another, and what it will do, it will just give us a win probability essentially for how the team is set out. The real benefit for that, which I'm really interested in, is how aggressive you can be with your selection. I mean, you can pick anyone in these simulations. We can talk about whether we play 10 batters and a keeper. Or everyone is a frontline bowler, and those are very extremes, of course. But it gives us the opportunity to test assumptions and test big ideas to push the game forward, without having to put our players in situations when we've got to manage workloads and the amount of cricket that they're playing anyway. So from of course there's loads of important variables that are hard to capture. And this is my point earlier, that what the model doesn't take into account are things like teamwork, interactions between one another, leadership on the pitch, ability to perform under pressure, fitness, all of those things. So when we go into selection, we would have already run a number of simulations with different lineups to test some assumptions, and that will give us a win probability. And we can then layer that on top of the actual context of how our players are going and the environment that we're going to be going into and who's fit and who's not, and then it becomes more of a discussion.
It's really fascinating, actually, the way that you say that and you put it all together. It's kind of scary as well at the same time. And it's because of the nature of the sport and its growth, that any small advantage that you can try and get, wherever it comes from, you'll gladly take as a team captain or a team coach. And American sport have been doing this, albeit not with AI, because it's a relatively recent sort of discovery and inclusion into this sort of model. But they have been doing things like this, statistical data and analysis, for a lot longer than cricket has. It's a hypothetical question, and I love the fact that you differentiated between the sort of the factors that you can measure against the factors that you can't. But hypothetically, if you went away in a room and selected, and you let AI or yourself or, you know, select an England team, or any team for that matter, and then you let the coach, without all of your information, select an England team, would there be a huge amount of difference between the two, do you think?
No. No, and that speaks to the power of experience and subjective assessment and understanding of the players. There would be, when we would go into selection, we may have, we would very rarely pick a team from 1 to 11. I think there would be understanding from the selectors that some players in some positions are givens based on the context of how they're playing and historically and all that. But there will be certain instances of certain roles within the game that the AI simulation or prediction, whatever you want to call it, may differ slightly. And I know Louis have alluded to this in the media previously, is that sometimes we actively go against what the AI model tells us to, because they're not the one picking the team. But it's pretty close. Yeah. And in terms of the strength of the model, from the accuracy and the confidence and conviction that we have in the information that we receive, it predicts between 80 to 90% of what actually happens on the field of play, which is incredibly strong. But what it doesn't do, as we say, takes into account. So we wouldn't get it to select a squad for a World Cup, because there are so many other elements that are involved with that in a global competition in Bangladesh, when you can't leave the hotel, really. Like, it's all the team dynamics and all of those things. That there are models that we don't need help with, and that's the balance between objective and subjective information, and it's our job to guide us to a point that we've got courage and conviction with the decisions that we're making. Yeah.
And what about the players, Liam? How much are they aware of, obviously, your role and the potential role that you play in selection? Are they pretty open-minded to it? Or I can imagine there's probably a spectrum when someone says that some of the team might be being picked by artificial intelligence, which I know isn't the case. It's not the case at all. But what's sort of been the response of players when you've been in and around the group?
There hasn't been much response, if I'm honest. I think that, as I said, there are a wonderful group of players. I'm not immersed within the player environment a huge amount. I was with them in Amman in India pre-Christmas, and I was with them for a day in Derby when it was extremely cold, which I think you guys were there too. And so, but there are questions. I did get given a question from a player of Liam, are you AI? And because of all the noise that you hear. But Louis, I was with Louis, he gave a very good response to say, well, we're all here today playing international cricket, so I think AI seems to be favourable on everyone that's in the room. But as I said before, it's not pulling out any real drastic left field decisions. A lot of the stuff that we're really confident with, we could layer on our experiential knowledge about the game and we wouldn't be too far away. So it's just a tool in a toolbox that, but the media love it. The media love AI. It was a busy week for me when Louis mentioned it in a press conference. but that's good. It's promotion for the game. It's promotion for the work that we do, and it pushes the women's game forward, which is exactly what we want to do.
Absolutely. And I think any sort of gains that can be made, I'm sure everyone is absolutely on board with that. Liam, it's been great to chat with you. Thank you so much for your time. I know our listeners will probably be really interested by this, because the word AI, suddenly, I don't know about you, Daggers, but it's like, oh my God, what on earth is going on?
Yeah, absolutely. Listening to that and listening to what Liam's had to say, if AI was around back in the turn of the century, I might never have got a game, so I'm very pleased it's something that's happened relatively recently as opposed to when I was playing in my career.
I think having the opportunity to try and explain it in digestible terms is really, really useful, because AI gets a lot of bad press, There are some existential threats that people believe around AI outside of cricket. But for ours, it's very safe. It's just here to inform our decision making, and I'm right behind it. I think there are massive opportunities, and the biggest opportunity for us as an organisation, I think, is how we can use artificial intelligence to democratise all of our information and make it more accessible and more understandable for all of our coaches and performance staff and regions, that so they can make essentially better decisions or more well-informed decisions on their players and ours. So it's here to stay, and it's not going to take over. So don't worry, we've got it on a tight leash. Yep.
That's good to hear. Well, Thea, thank you again, Liam. It's been brilliant to have you on. We really appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Liam.
No problem.
Yeah, best of luck for this summer and the World Cup coming as well.
Thank you very much. Good to see you.
Well, Daggers, what did you make of that? I found that really interesting.
I did. I found it fascinating, actually, when I started to understand it, at least. Yes. And I think it's that, it's the understanding of it. And we are always, I feel, within cricket, but it's not necessarily in cricket, within life as well, we're scared of something new. We're scared of necessarily other factors that sort of upset the norm that we're used to. So we're basically, we'll go around and look at player X and player Y and go, cool, they're all right, they should get a go. And, you know, and this is actually giving you some what I was key on was that they are just suggestions. That's what they are. It's Liam's job to actually just suggest who might work, who might not work. But if you have a gut feeling, if you're John Lewis and you have a gut feeling about player X or player Y, then they're not saying to pick these players. You can still go with your gut feeling, and that is actually what is the final and defining selection criteria that it is the person who you think is going to perform in any given competition or situation. These are just suggestions that Liam are putting forward with fairly credible evidence, I've got to say.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way the game has gone over the last, well, I would say decade or so from a data perspective, but now technology is moving on in such a pace that other aspects can be brought in to assist coaches and captains with a variety of selection. I think it's something that should be championed and not scared of, as long as it is still a tool, as Liam said, rather than the overwhelming decision on who gets picked for a certain team or not. Are you in agreement?
Yeah, absolutely. I really liked how often he recognised that there are subjective factors, which that's the coaches, that's their expertise, that's why they are in the job. And then the objective stuff, which is the facts and the data that Liam and his team presents to them. So I love that they obviously have that balance and understanding. And more so, I think, from sort of a pathway and regional point of view, particularly when you have coaches who are operating across so many different teams and with different players, I think it's really handy for them to have access to certain information as well. You know, just things like strike rates. What should the strike rates be looking at in terms of players and their performances? The ball trajectory one was an interesting one as well. So I think for coaches down at those lower levels, I think that can be really helpful too. Hopefully our listeners enjoyed that. Right, Daggers, let's wrap things up.
Yes.
And this actually has been something which we've had a lot of interest from on the old socials. So last week we announced that we will be spotlighting a cricket club each week, and it will be, or maybe two, depending on how generous we're feeling.
Yes.
And we will be talking about all the brilliant people, the setup that they've got, the journey that they've been on to develop the offering that they give to their female members. And we have had, I can tell you, so many people get in touch with us, obviously on the socials, but on emails as well. And I know, Daggers, you've been operating our email inbox, which has been been pretty busy, hasn't it?
It has. And I've been trying to respond to as many as I actually can. But firstly, thank you for getting in touch is the first thing. We want to celebrate the women's sections around the country. It would be lovely to find at least one over the next however many counties and regions there are in England, Wales, and Northern Ireland, etc., etc. We want to hear from Scotland, of course, and we want to try and put a little pin in a map. I should get a massive map, actually.
Yes.
Sort of, and pins and that sort of thing. I don't have much room in my cave.
Eat your heart out, Cricket AI, when we've got maps and pins.
Absolutely, yeah, we could do that, couldn't we? Although they'd have to feed it to me because I wouldn't know how to do it. I'm still very much of the old sort of, you know, the old weather maps that you used to get with Michael Fish and Wincy Willis and people like that. Putting little cards on. I would like to do that with a great big map, just here, and putting pins in where we can do that. So get in touch with us. I'd love loads of different regions to be covered. You can do this in a variety of ways. You can email us, as Lydia mentioned, daggersandlids@outlook.com. And it's spelt A-N-D, and lids is spelt with a Y. So daggersandlids@outlook.com. Or if you want a quick sort of tap us up, you can do so on social media at Lydia Greenway, at Charles Dagnall on X, and me on Insta. If you want to just tap us up and sort of say, how do I do it? And with things we want to know the history of your club, who are the characters, who's the noisy one, who's the messy one, which leagues you play in, when you started up, how the group are doing. We want photos. Even better, you can send us a 2-minute video. Landscape. Send us a 2-minute video and we will try and spotlight you. We'd love all of that. So yeah, the more we get, the better. And we'll try and highlight how much the game is growing within the UK. So our first team in the club spotlight, we start in Surrey, just beneath the M25. Alison Langham got in touch with us. And she writes, this is our first one that we're spotlighting. After a failed attempt to launch a women's team about 7 years ago, in which I had played in Oxted and Limpsfield, the chair approached me to see if I would like to try again 3 years ago. They set about forming a women's team called The Force, like that, and they found netballers, footballers, pickleball players, golfers, I don't know what pickleball is, by the way, golfers and mums of the current boys' teams. First year, they had some coaching, but on a rotating coach basis, had no matching kit, borrowed the larger junior boys' shirts, and frankly looked a bit of a mess, says Alison, but had a great time and great fun, and they went on to come second in the Surrey Slam League and won 2 softball tournaments. Second year, they had a regular coach, which made a massive difference. They found a tennis player who changed the team, who was an absolute natural. Oxted and Limpsfield went on to win the local Surrey Slam League, qualifying for the finals, winning a hardball tournament and retaining their indoor winter softball title. This year, Oxted and Limpsfield formed a girls' junior section, has been absolute brilliant. They've got a regular core side, and have a dedicated coach, winter nets training, and kit available for their women's and girls' sizes so they can even look like a team. This is what we like to see, progression. Mm. We play in the local Surrey Slam, entered the Surrey Development Sunday League, and Alison, unfortunately, hasn't played, Lydia. well, she did play, but she's been on crutches for the majority, captaining from the sidelines because she... tried to keep the strike going for a quick single and tore a hamstring and an adductor. And after a visit to A&E, she was on crutches from there on in. So get better soon, Alison. She reckons she'll be able to sneak in a couple of matches towards the end of the season. So good on you. Good on Oxted and Limpsfield. They are our first spotlighted clubs on the Daggers and Lids podcast. Good on them. And it's lovely to see that progression, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I have to say, they've set the bar pretty high, haven't they? Obviously, the progression, as you say, that they've seen over the last few years. And I love it that they've set up a girls' junior section as well. I think that is fundamental to any club trying to build a sustainable women and girls section. So, brilliant to hear. And I know, Daggers, you will have so many more in your email box. So we will try and get through more as we go along through each episode, maybe even a couple each week just to try and get everyone in. But great work, Daggers, on collating all of that. And thank you as ever to everyone who has listened today. We really hope you enjoyed it. And we will, of course, be back next week.